Cheer Bomb. We are strong. We are powerful. We are cheerleaders. And now, here are your hosts, Marcus and Marisol.
Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Marisol.
Holy moly.
Hold on. I'm still coming down a little bit. It was a great weekend.
Well, happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
And Passover, if you celebrate it. Yes. What an amazing weekend.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. I'm nervous now. For the first, this is what, podcast number 37?
Yes.
This might be the first one I'm not nervous, but I'm conscious of thousands of listeners.
No, they're here.
Oh my gosh.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome, new listeners. So we had this amazing incident occur on Friday. We had the wonderful and beautiful Melissa Cummings on our podcast. And I was very excited and I thought it was a great podcast and I thought it would do well. But
I have to admit, I was a little cautious at first because I thought it was going to bring back like old situations and bring back like negatively and like just put them back out there. But all the feedback that I heard was that
it was awesome. Busters.
And it was great hearing. You never really hear that side of any type of story.
Yeah.
So.
Well. It went bananas. Like it went. It is the most downloaded episode we've had, which is still shocking to me.
Yes.
And this is in no reflection of Melissa Cummings that I'm shocked. Like she was wonderful. The podcast
Absolutely.
Was wonderful. But we've had some big name stars, you know, with huge social media followings on the show, and they've done well. But we broke the barrier, like the. With a parent.
Yeah.
And I'm ecstatic. So this is how it went for me. So we published it at 9 a.m. And again, I didn't run any promotions on it. I didn't pay Google. I didn't do anything. Nothing. I just posted it at 9. I think I was even late with the show notes. I was just, and I checked the stats like an hour later. And it had already broken 4 figures.
Oh.
Which in 24 hours, like, that's usually us in a weekend.
Yeah.
Not in an hour.
In an hour.
And I thought something was wrong with my computer. I was like, what? What? And cleaned my glasses. I was like, oh my gosh. Then I thought, okay, well, great. Wonderful. It just kept going and go. And then people started liking, like on Anchor, you can like, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Oh, really?
And then I get notifications on my phone, like a little hand clap, and it was my phone was just boom. And then I was communicating with Melissa, like, holy moly. It just was crazy. And then the numbers, it was just being shared and shared and shared. And then I was getting text and I was getting DMs and I was getting Facebook
messages.
Heard
like a real like bit like
big,
big people. Well,
I mean,
like
companies,
in the industry were companies were listening to it.
Varsity heard it. This is what I heard. Don't know. A couple of people at Varsity. Huge names in the industry. I was like
big coaches,
big gyms, and I was just overwhelmed. I was just overwhelmed with gratitude. It's the most successful podcast I've ever produced. And it was humbling. It was exciting.
It was so much, and it was so easy.
It was a great conversation.
So much fun.
It was a fun. I mean, and the thing is, none of it was. It was totally organic.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, I ran no ads. I used no money to promote it. I don't even know what her social media following is. I'm assuming it's a lot less than her daughter's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she shared it. She was kind enough to share it. But it didn't only just bring huge downloads for her episode. Every single episode went up. Every single, like, by the thousands. Like, we have thousands of new listeners, which now makes me a little nervous.
Why?
Because now it's, I don't know, it felt more intimate before. Like, Now it's, I don't know. I'm not that nervous, to be honest with you.
No, it's so exciting.
It was fun.
And like, we were international before, like, this is just getting bigger.
It is.
So, it's so cool.
And I got some, I don't know if we haven't talked, so this is the first time we're catching up. I got so much feedback. I mean, we got more Dear Marcuses and Marisols because people from that were listening to old episodes started writing in now. Yeah. Which we'll try to answer them on our last, you know, season finale episode.
I know Darnell called me and he was with Melissa. I was at work, so I couldn't talk, but he was like amazing.
Oh, he liked it?
Oh, yeah. I still think that is so funny that my cousin listens to my podcast. my brother listened to our podcast.
Did he?
All of them.
I got message after message. The Crazy Mom story was very popular as well.
I bet. I bet.
It was a little like a lot of people wrote in to me to share their crazy mom stories. Mm-hmm. Which I haven't read them all. I haven't replied to all of them. Like, if I got the gist that you were sharing your crazy mom story, it's just, it was Easter weekend and, you know, there was a lot going on. So I will get back to as many people as I can. But a lot of people could relate to that part of it. They could totally loved Melissa's side of things. So I'm just, you know, Melissa, I know you're listening. Thank you so, so much.
You're so awesome.
If you ever want to start a podcast, let me know. I'd be happy to produce it. yeah, that was crazy. And the craziest part for me, I was thinking about this morning, was, you know, our discussion about social media has been ongoing the whole season.
Oh, yeah.
And this to me was such a personification of that question that I had, which is, you know, is social media real? Like, what's the real, you know, tangible thing we get from it? Again, not a huge social media following. Our guest this week doesn't even have social media.
I believe that. We learned that last year.
And so having hundreds of thousands of followers is great for the people that have 100,000 followers. I would love if Cheerbomb had 100,000 followers. But it doesn't necessarily relate to
absolutely
anything, money.
Because I'm pretty sure, of all the people that we've had on both seasons, she may have like the lowest following. In the kindest of words.
It's just I'm humbled. I'm grateful. Thank you to everyone who listened. It is, if you're listening to us for the first time today, please go check it out.
Welcome.
You got anything else to say about last week?
About last week?
About the episode?
I was just excited.
Yeah.
No. And she always seemed like a really cool person. That's why I love this. I love this so much because we get to talk to these big name people and they, like, this makes them like a person, a real person and not like a... like a mutant out on the floor.
Yeah. No, it's. Yeah, my phone kept dying from how much I was checking the downloads, and I love that there's like two different analytics that showed up, and it's like a bar graph and a line graph, and I sent it to her, and I'm like, just if you're ever feeling like, you know, you're having an off day, you can look at this and be like, oh my gosh. Yeah, she beat her daughter.
I saw that message. I was like, I can't wait to tell her that I'm more famous.
Oh, and I promised Ryan I was going to say something. Thankfully, I remembered.
Yes.
She is not in middle school.
No, she is not.
She is a freshman. Her mom had a mommy moment, which I have. I think my youngest is still in fourth grade, and she's in seventh. She is a freshman. So, Ryan, thank you very much for that clarification. Well, I don't think we have much more. I think the best thing we can do right now is just shoot it right into. It's a long interview. It's World's Week.
It is.
So excited. I'm so excited. And we have
the Victor Rosario, co-owner and creator of Top Gun All-Stars. And this one is super exciting, guys. We have a co-owner and founder of Top Gun All-Stars. We have Victor Rosario. How's it going, Victor?
It's going great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for coming. This has been such an exciting, exciting get and guest to have with us.
Thank you, Victor, for coming. We're both a little nervous on this one. We have to admit, because you have been requested several times by our audience, mm-hmm. as far as getting you on the podcast. So thank you for coming. And I'm going to already start with this. I kind of want your wife next. Next season, we want her. So thank you.
I'm surprised she wasn't requested more. She's been pretty popular the past few years with all she's doing in the industry, you know, between the USSF board and other stuff.
We're going to get her on. So you need to help us with that.
Yeah. thank you. I'm very honored to be a part of anything positive for this industry. You know, I've been around for a long time and seen it grow, and any way that I can continue to foster that, I'm willing to be a part of.
Well, we're all about positivity on the podcast, and I just want to start with your story, yours, and you know, you can add your wife's into it, because I want to hear the love story. I love cheerleading love stories.
Of course, it would be hard to tell the story without including her in almost every aspect of it.
And Jimbo gave me really good advice. Jimbo said that I needed to do a timeline, like not just ask you about your start and the end, but go through the whole
let's get career, it all
since you're just an insider. So let's start. Let's dig in. So when did cheerleading pop up in your life?
Funny enough, I had no idea what a cheerleader was for, I would say, the first 14 years of my life. I grew up in the South Bronx in New York. So if you know anything about the South.
Queens.
You know anything about the South Bronx, it's, you know, it's not a place where cheerleading, especially a male cheerleader, would be very popular at. So again, I had no idea what cheerleading was. I learned how to tumble from the age of 4 through 14, just on the street, flipping off of garbage cans, parked cars, you know, off the steps, things like that. And then I ended up moving down to Miami my sophomore year of high school.
What high school did you go to? I'm from New York and Miami. So born in New York, raised in Miami. So I'm 305. Hialeah. Don't hold it against me. What high school did you go to?
No problem. I went to South Miami Senior High School.
All American. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm distracting. You're in Miami.
No, you're good. So that was, like I said, that was my sophomore year that I moved down for that. And my junior year, I met Kristen.
Oh my God, you're like high school sweethearts?
Yes, we're high school sweethearts.
Oh my goodness. So,
it was the beginning of my senior year that I met Kristen. So she had actually met or saw me that summer at, you know, cheerleaders usually perform at like back to school night or orientation. So apparently, from what she tells me, I was doing back handspring series all the way down the basketball court at back to school night. And she was sitting there with her boyfriend at the time. She's like, wow, oh my God, that's really cool. That guy just did. And he was like, oh yeah, that's Victor. He's going to go to the Olympics. Cause back then that was my dream, was I was going to be an Olympic gymnast. So a couple months later, we ended up meeting and kind of hit it off. the things didn't work out too well with the other guy.
I was going to say, I'm a writer and I could totally reframe this whole story with she spotted you on the court by flipping and she knew she wanted your DNA, but that's just me as a writer. let's just move on. Did you cheer in high school?
Right. So I ended up getting into cheerleading in high school at junior and senior year. People from the school had seen me doing flips around campus and had some of the cheerleaders, both guys and girls, that were in some of my classes. I had a crush on the captain of the cheer team.
That's such a common theme.
And, right? She was, you know. So, yeah, she caught my eye and she kind of lured me into to try out for the team. And then I fell in love with it. I love the fact that our program at the time was a co-ed program. So I was one of about 10 guys, which is pretty unusual for a high school team.
Wow. Yeah, it is. That's very, even today. I mean,
and there were other guys on the team. One in particular named Tony James, rest in peace. He passed away a couple of years ago, but, he was a gymnast, and I was able to actually kind of follow him to his gymnastics school that he was going to here in Kendall. It was a Kendall Boys and Girls Club. And so now I was able to do gymnastics and cheer at the same time, my junior and senior year.
Do you mind if I ask you how old you are or what year this is? You don't have to.
I'm going to be 44 on July 1st.
46 on July 14th.
Ooh. Ooh,
cancers.
Both cancers, yeah.
Okay, so you're at the Kendall Boys and Girls Club doing, did they do like all-star cheer too, or was it?
No, Kendall Boys and Girls Club did gymnastics. So I was learning how to do all the different events because I already came in kind of knowing how to tumble, but actually learned the technique and why I was able to do the things that I was doing and how to improve on that, and then learn all the other events. At the same time, I was doing the varsity team at my high school at South Miami. And so I did that for junior and senior year. And senior year, like I said, that's when Kristen and I met in the fall. So that was, 1991?
So, and cheerleading is totally different back then, right? Like, I need you to take me back because I don't know.
Well, our team was a competitive team. So we actually, you know, we cheered for basketball and football. And then we also had a competition routine. So we'd compete at local competitions, you know, at different high schools. They used to call them regionals back then. Mm-hmm. And some of them were to qualify for UCA High School Nationals, which we didn't end up making it. But we competed out at a competition called, what was it? I'm trying to remember. I think it was NCC, whatever that stood for, National Cheerleading Championship. It was a very small cheer company out in California. So we flew out there and competed at that event. And we ended up winning that event, but I think we're like one of only two teams in the division. So it wasn't
a huge. I love his honesty. Like, yeah, it was one of two.
Right. So yeah, so we had a competitive team and we were pretty good. We were decent for our time.
Back then in the 90s, was there all-star cheer? Like there is it?
There was, that I can remember. I mean, there were teams like North Garland All-Stars, Cheers Incorporated out of Kentucky.
Cheers Incorporated. I remember them.
Yeah. So you're an actual witness to the whole.
No,
like,
he saw it from the very beginning, which this is so special to me.
If we ever did that, like back behind the scenes, like documentary on cheerleading,
he would
have to be like, what? Do you remember that show, the VH1 show Behind the Music?
Yes.
I keep thinking like someone has to do a documentary for cheerleading, like take us back to the beginning.
Behind the megaphone?
Yeah.
Behind the
pom-pom. Yeah.
Done.
Okay. So take us to the night. Do you go compete in college? Do you start your gym? Like what's your story?
Anyway, so like I said, Kristen and I met, we hit it off, we start dating, and in the summer of 92, I start working for NCAA high school summer camp staff. I made All-American, and back then, you know, you used to make All-American. They would kind of give you an app to apply for summer camp staff. So I did that. I did that from 92 to 94. And I went to Florida International University.
Woohoo, FIU.
Right, so I was an FIU cheerleader. And
grown so much since the beginning.
My God, when I first started, there were four buildings. Now it's like,
I know.
I just drove by the other day. It's like its own city.
It is. It's great. I was just in Miami last week. Sorry, Marcus, we're taking the interview.
No, do it.
I was just in Miami, and because I took classes at FIU during the summer. I went to FSU. And it's just complete. It's a huge university now. It's like crazy. They have their own football team. They didn't have a football team when I started. Okay, sorry. Nope. I don't mean to distract. So you're at FIU.
No, you're good. I'm at FIU. We go to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville for a college camp. And it's my first time at a college camp. And they end up having a competition for the best tumbler, jumper, and stunner of the camp called Top Gun. I competed in, I went out for all three and I actually won all three. That's kind of where the name came from. You know, some people thought it was, oh, the movie Top Gun. That's where you guys got it from. No, it was actually the competition called. I mean, I guess they got the name Top Gun from the movie, meaning the best of the best. But for me, it was about the fact that I had just, you know, won these three competitions.
That's so cool.
I can't wait to tell people that story. It's like, no, that's not where that name came from.
I assumed it was Top Gun the movie too.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like you.
So I guess in a roundabout way, it is. I guess it is.
But you were honoring that moment in your life, I feel like.
Right.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Right. So when I came back to Miami and, you know, I tell Kristen about it and everything, I'm like, you know what? I think I want to start a team and I want to call it Top Gun. So as I went teaching high school summer camp staff, every time I would see a kid from the area that I was really impressed by, I was like, hey, you need to try off my team. You need to try off my team. I'm going to start a team. And little by little, I started recruiting over the process of like 2 years, kids from, you know, different cities around us and also from the Junior Orange Bowl cheerleaders. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
I do. The Orange Bowl, I remember.
Right. Well, I was coaching them for 2 years because my FIU coach got me a job working with them to kind of help offset the cost of my tuition. So that was kind of how I paid for college. And so I coached them for 2 years. So the kids that I had worked with from Junior Orange Bowl and then the ones that I had recruited, that basically was essentially the kids that first came to try out for our first official Top Gun team, which was our large co-ed team, now known as TGLC, back in 1994.
That's
it. We started off with 10 guys and 10 girls.
It's like listening to history.
No, this is history.
That's awesome.
I could listen to this history all day.
Of course, Chris and I are dating now, and I tell her, you know, hey, I need someone to help me with kind of collecting the money, you know, whatever nominal fee we're going to be able to collect. And we collected like $55 a month from each kid. And it was just basically to be able to rent space to practice at a cheer gym that I was actually working. I was the first cheerleading gym, at least that I had ever heard of. Definitely the first one in South Florida. It was called the Cheer Factory, and it was right across the street from FIU. And we would just, my FIU cheer coach was one of the owners. So we would rent space there to practice once a week. And the other time a week, we would jump over the fence to the nearby elementary school and we'd practice in the grass. Yeah. And Kristen would basically run the books. She would help me coach, and she was in charge of organizing all the money.
And you're dating. You're not married at this point.
We're just dating. Yep. We're dating. Our original colors were black, red, and white because I had aspirations of going to cheer for University of Louisville. But unfortunately, James Speed at the time, he didn't really follow through with recruiting me that, you know, as heavily as I would have wanted.
But Victor,
so thankfully that worked out.
I was going to say, is it really unfortunate? Because I feel like it worked out for you.
No, it definitely worked out. I mean, at the time when I was, you know, coming out of high school, because James Speed was my first college head instructor. I just finished winning Top Gun, you know, the awards at camp, just had this guy who's an amazing, you know, icon in the industry, amazing stunter as my head instructor. He was coaching the best team in the, you know, the country or the world at that point. And I was like, I want to go cheer for this guy, learn everything he has to know. And it just didn't work out that way.
That's how life is though, isn't it? Like you would think with everything, you know, you had accomplished at that point that something like that would be seamless for you. But
Full circle. My daughter is turning 18. My oldest daughter is turning 18 on Wednesday, and she's trying out for the University of Louisville.
Oh, wow.
She's already been admitted. She's already been admitted, and she wants to go out for the all-girl team.
Oh, that's going to be...
Does she this is off the record on the podcast. Do you think she would name drop... I'm talking to Marcus now. Do you think she would name drop her dad, like...
I feel like honestly, she doesn't have to.
Yeah, because her
skin. I don't think so at all. Both of my children, I guess, because of the way Kristen and I are, and the way that we, you know, coach our kids and our staff to not be out there so much on social media. They didn't have Instagram or anything until just a couple of years ago. Like no one even knew who Demi and Jody Rosario were.
I think
just until recently.
Fabulous. And I have that as one of my questions for you after we get through your story is about social media, because I noticed you aren't on it and I so respect that. Okay, so you didn't go to Louisville.
Didn't go to Louisville, but I adopted the colors, black, red, and white. We went to our, you know, MCA summer camp as a team that year. That was a summer of 94. We had our little screen printed practice wear, black, red, and white. And, you know, we put a routine together. We get our music, which I used to cut the music on the dual cassette tape decks. I would cut it myself. I would try to find songs that already had sound effects naturally in it to kind of use that to, you know, to accent certain things. Uh-huh. And if you remember that, if you ever did that process.
Oh, yeah.
Pause and record and play and back and forth and take the tape out and rewind it back with your finger and do it again if you got it wrong.
I am a student of the mixtapes.
Yep. So I did that, and we get all the way to basically having our routine, having our music, and Chris and I just sit down and we're like, we did it. We're going to Nationals. We're actually going to go to NCAA All-Star Nationals in Dallas, Texas in February, and we're ready to go. We have our flights. We got our hotels. Oh my God, we have no uniforms. So,
you established a whole program. Like, as you're describing it to me, you're like best practicing right now how to start a gym. Like, mm-hmm. Wow. So no uniforms.
Right. So this is now 1994. Kristen has just graduated from high school. I am now at Miami-Dade Community College Kendall campus. Now they call it, it went from Miami-Dade South to Miami-Dade Kendall, so now it's just Miami-Dade College. But there's like 8 different campuses, and Dade South had a very strong collegiate co-ed program. So I left FIU. Just my grades weren't that good. I went to Miami-Dade to try to get my grades up, and Kristen graduates, and she meets me there at Miami-Dade. So now we're cheering together at Miami-Dade. And one of my college roommates is my coach from Miami-Dade, and I'm like, hey, Adam, can I borrow the team's uniforms for the Nationals?
Oh my goodness.
And thankfully we had a set of uniforms that just said Jags on it. Black, gold, and white, Jags. And that's how we became Black, gold, and white Jaguars, because we showed up at Nationals and those were our colors and that was our mascot. We weren't going to come the next year with black, red, and white, Top Gun All-Stars, something else. So we just kind of stuck with it.
Oh my goodness. That's mind-blowing to me, because, you know, when you don't know the history of it, you just have it in your head a certain way, and it's like, that's an amazing story. That's like, when there's a will, there's a way, and what's meant to be is meant to be, because that's kind of amazing. So how'd you do in the competition?
Yeah. Well, we won our local competition, we won our states, and then we ended up placing second at NCAA All-Stars our first year out in 1995, and we lost to Pro Cheer, which was the Pro Cheer out of Kansas City metro area, not the one that's out of Georgia. And that team basically kicked our butt for the next 5 years straight.
Oh, wow.
Every single year at UC and NCA, we'd get second to them, second and second and second and second. And then in 1998, they ended up trying to do like a greatest hits of their past routines. Uh-huh. Didn't seem to go over very well. And it was the first time that I finally said, you know what? I can't beat this team at their game. Because every year they would do something, and the next year I would basically copy what they did to try to emulate them.
Yeah.
But if they were doing a toss Liberty, and I copied a toss Liberty, then they were doing toss stretches when I was doing the Liberty. Then I would do a stretch and they were doing a QB. We were always one step behind.
You were chasing them instead of doing your own thing. Yeah, got it.
Right. And so it taught me a very valuable lesson that, you know, you have to be the best you can be. You can't. And there's even I saw a quote and an image on social media, and it had Michael Phelps in the pool and he's swimming. He's way ahead and everybody else is swimming, but they're looking back. You know, they're looking over to the side of him to see where he's at. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're watching someone else, you're not going to be the best you can be.
Yeah, no. I concur. My idol, Oprah Winfrey, she said that when she had the show, you know, for like 20 years out of Chicago, and everyone started, you know, coming up from behind, you know, Ricky Lake and everyone, she always said she never looked back. She didn't care what they were doing. She wished them well. She just focused on herself, and that's how she kept you being the number one talk show host
that's
forever.
That's beautiful advice in all aspects of life.
In all aspects of life.
So I attribute that year, 1997-98, for being kind of the turning point of our program, because I finally said, you know what, all these ideas that I've I've come up with, that I've had, but I've kind of held back because I either thought they weren't good enough or they were stupid. I mean, I'm very insecure about what I could contribute.
Yeah, your self-talk was negative. Because you're young. So I said, how old are you at that point?
Early
20s?
This is 98, so about 23, 24.
Yeah, that's most people are, it's hard to have that confidence at the early 20s of like, but I'm so excited because I know where you end up. So,
yes.
But in your 20s, it's like, I'm going to say this, it's ballsy. It's very ballsy to be like, I'm going to do my thing.
So, yeah, so and like I said, that season I decided, I'm just going to go out on a limb and let me try some ideas that I've had that I think they sound cool to me. They look cool in my head. They look cool on paper. Let's see what happens. And we ended up getting second again that year because we had a drop stunt, like literally in the last 5 seconds of the Retina NCA.
No.
But we ended up beating the team that had beaten us for the past 5 or 6 years, so that was a big breakthrough that felt. That's a big confidence boost.
And absolutely. A huge teachable moment, too, probably
right.
A secret to your success, yeah.
Right. So the following year after that, we ended up getting second again at NCA because that was the year that NCA started allowing all music routines, and we were doing music and cheer because, actually, 98 was the first year, but we were still continuing to do music and cheer because we were also competing at UCA and didn't want to have to change our routines.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going with the same routine all season long. It ended up working in our, against us because the teams that were doing all music routines were scoring better.
Okay,
they seemed to be more entertaining.
So I'm a layman. So when you say, what I'm assuming that means is like all music is now like the 2 minutes and 30 is all music.
Correct.
Back then they would stop and like clap and
even
say a cheer. Okay,
even like would do, now. Close to nobody has like any type of cheer. Like it wasn't until like a couple years ago where they would do like, I don't know, like four lines of a little something.
Yeah. Cause I've never seen it in the 4 years I've.
And then before that it was like music, stop music, cheer, and then finish, or like however like they would want to. That's normally how it went. But
I think if someone should do that now as a retro, just totally like be
throw
shocking.
Everyone off.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So you came in second because you were doing that.
Right.
So is that when it shifted to like all music around that time then?
Okay. Yeah. About 98 is when it shifted to all music. If you were competing at NCA, mm-hmm. We were doing it, like I said, NCA and UCA. So UCA still had the cheer. We ended up winning UCA. That year, 98 and 99, we won UCA, but we didn't win NCA. And then 2000 was the breakthrough. We went all music. We actually dropped the stunt in finals, but our routine was, I think for its time, so cutting edge that we were able to win NCA for the first time. So 6 years from when we started competing there till we finally won our first NCA championship.
That's a climb. That's a story right
no,
there.
No, that's a story. Yeah, chills.
That was 2000, NCAA 2000.
And so
you know what?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, after that, it wasn't about winning anymore. I finally felt like I had that monkey off my back, that weight had been lifted. Because I always tell my kids, the coach that I am now at 44 was not who I was at 34, 24, 18 when I first started. I was very much about the competitive side. Like the whole reason I started Top Gun was because I wanted to make this kick butt team that was going to go out there and, dominate and this and that. And I feel like we finally did that. I was okay. Well, what's left now? What do I do? And so I had to kind of reinvent my purpose of why I was doing what I was doing. And so I dove more into, cheerleading has brought so much positivity to all these kids' lives. Even though I didn't have that as my priority those first 6 years, it was doing it anyway. And now I rearranged my focus, said, I'm going to use All-Star Cheer and the lessons that Kristen and I can teach them from our experiences. And for me, growing up in the Bronx and having, a single mom and divorced parents and, addictions in my family, all these kind of things, I'm going to take all these kids that come from all these places, and I'm going to show them that you can still accomplish phenomenal things if you set your mind to it. And if you don't let people tell you that, you're destined to be only this, because that's how you know, your parents were, or that's the cards you were dealt. And so that's what it's been all about since then. It's been using cheer as a vehicle to get them to realize their potential.
That's like amazingly beautiful. Like it sounds to me, not knowing you and hearing the story for the first time, it feels to me like you're just an example of someone who's constantly evolving. You're not like, I know everything. That's what my perception would be. You know, that the owner.
I would say you're right. So I'm always telling our athletes and our staff, you know, that the day that you feel like you have nothing else to learn, then it's probably time for you to retire. And I'm not there yet. I'm constantly looking at other sports, other, you know, speakers, different coaches, different programs, trying to beg, borrow, and steal what I can to continue to make me better as a coach, as an athlete, as a dad, as a, you know, choreographer, as a gym owner.
As a person.
I don't feel like I'm,
as a person. I tell my friends all the time, this moment you think you know everything and the time you stop learning is when you start aging. When you go into life like with that childlike, like, I don't know what's going to happen, and try your best, that's when miracles happen, in my humble opinion. Okay, so you have a gym. At this point in your career, you have one, right? Top Gun Miami?
We have 5 locations currently.
No, I know. I'm getting there.
At that point, yes.
You have one.
So we went from, like I said, we would rent space out of a cheer gym. Then we would rent space out of a gymnastics gym. Then we would just practice in the grass. Tropical Park here in Miami was kind of our first stomping grounds. And then also Miami Lakes Park up in your area.
Yeah.
So I like to joke around and tell everyone that, you know, before anybody else, we already had 2 locations. Miami Lakes Park.
That's funny.
Yeah. We're really trendsetters.
How long were you at a one gym location? Like, how long were you with just Miami before you expanded?
Well, it wasn't until my former gymnastics coach contacted me and said, hey, I opened up a cheer gym, but I don't know anything about cheerleading, but I know you do. Would you like to be third partner? All you have to do is bring your knowledge and whatever kids you have. So that's how we got our first facility. It was just a 3,000 square foot warehouse bay that we were renting. This was 1997.
Where's this?
It was here in Miami, not too far from where we're at right now in Kendall. It had 7 panel dead mat, the same tumble track that we have now in our Miami gym, the same big trampoline that we have now, had 1 bathroom, had no office. Kristen's desk was like the starting block for the tumble track. So kids would jump off of it to go into their round off. Sometimes they would tumble the other. Sometimes if they tumbled back the other way, they would actually land on her desk and like knock her papers everywhere.
No.
We have no air conditioning. You know, a couple of years later, we ended up building a little 10x10 office and air conditioned it so she could have a place to collect payments and be in the AC. It was around the same time that, you know, we got engaged and had our first daughter. So, we had that one space. And then as we started to grow from having 1 or 2 teams to 3 to 6 to 9 to 12, we kept on renting a warehouse bay next door and then one, you know, right across the street. So we ended up with a total of 3 warehouse bays in the same complex. And then we just kind of outgrew that and decided to find something that was big enough to have all the floors in one space. So in 2004, we found a place that had, you know, space to have 2 spring floors, our tumble track, our rod floor, our 2 trampolines. It was 8,500 square feet total, including the office space. And we stayed there for 11 years. And, you know, we didn't have enough parking. We were constantly getting harassed by the city because, you know, we didn't have the parking. We didn't have the fire sprinkler systems. We didn't have everything you're supposed to have for, you know, a properly zoned and run shooting facility. We were just doing it all backwards.
Yeah. I call that the MacGyver stage. You were MacGyvering.
we were doing it all wrong. And, you know, so we looked for years for different places to that could, you know, fit the amount of teams that we were going to have and the floors that we wanted to have under one roof. But because of Hurricane Andrew back in the early 90s, everything that was built after Hurricane Andrew had a pole every 40 feet, which cuts into the floor space. So we had to find something that was, you know, hopefully built before then, that had the big open space for our spring floors and everything. And there was nothing, we just couldn't find anything that had the space or the ceiling height or was zoned properly or was in the right neighborhood. So we kind of gave up on it. And then we finally had to get out. Like, we were getting kicked out. And thankfully, Kristen, for about 3 years, she had started working with, oddly enough, one of our hometown rivals, the Miami All-Stars, Miami Elite All-Stars, had a dominant co-ed program, an All-Star program, just like we did in Hialeah.
three of five.
Their large co-ed actually won the first two worlds.
Yeah.
In the large co-ed division.
Oh, yeah.
And we, class. And some of, a couple of those guys that owned that program were former Top Gun large co-ed boys. They were kind of our, you know, the kids that would always get in trouble, kind of our riffraffs, mm-hmm. but they knew about cheerleading and they were super passionate. So they went and they started their own thing in Hialeah, and we ended up cheering all together at Miami-Dade for a little while. And one of the guys named Carlos Velasquez, he also got into commercial real estate and he had gotten out of cheer. So Kristen contacted him and he actually helped us find the land, the builders and everything, got everything built, you know, to the correct code and specifications. And in 2014, we opened up our own 15,000 square foot facility here in Miami. Completely legit. Totally legit.
Crazy. That is beautiful.
Yeah. So that's why we always try to stay cordial, even with our competitors, because you never know when you might need to cross that bridge. And thankfully, we did.
I think that's a life lesson. You should just be cordial, period.
Period.
Life is too short to to be ugly. Yeah. Where does that put us now, like in the timeline?
So that brings 2014. Us up to speed to about 2014. We have our own facility. By that point, we already also have the Naples/Fort Myers location, because that kind of fell in our lap somewhere around 08 or 09, around there. Well, let's see. They're now going to their 17th or 18th season. So backtrack from there. It was earlier than that. So it was in the early 2000s that we got that gym. It was basically, it was Naples Elite All-Stars. It was run by a couple moms. They had about 60 kids. They wanted out, but they didn't want to leave it, you know, their kids to no one and not have any place to cheer. Mm-hmm. And they were friends with some of the moms from our large co-ed. So they kind of put us in connection with each other. We ended up going over there. We put somebody in place to run it and we brought in a staff and built that program up. I used to commute 2 hours back and forth twice a week from Naples to Miami to be able to coach there and help get them off the ground.
I think this is a good point in the story where I'd like to ask some like questions about from your experience as far as like best practices from the gym owner perspective.
Okay.
Because you, and I'm making this up, but I feel like you've created a program that's renowned. Am I?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's a renowned program. I look at Marcus for
no, absolutely.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, if I know what Top Gun, I'm assuming, you know, it's renowned. And you have how many locations? Is that five?
There's five total.
Five total. So I'm in any industry, regardless of what it is, I'm always fascinated by best practices because I think why reinvent the wheel if someone's doing something well.
Mm-hmm.
I want, you know, I'm not talking about copying. I'm just talking about taking the best. What if you were doing like a TED talk on cheerleading? Let's say your audience is separate. Let's say one audience is gym owners, one audience is parents, and one audience is cheerleaders. What are some best practices that you would share with these different audiences from your wealth? And you can take a minute or two to think about it, but from your wealth of experience, if you could have everyone just looking at you and you had something to impart with them, what would you say? Like, what would you say to like gym owners?
Because that's
a huge perspective.
I would say for gym owners, the most important thing that I've learned in now, you know, 25 years of being in business is that if you don't understand how to run the actual business side of it, which is where Kristen comes in, I can't even say that's my forte at all. If you don't have the organizational mind and be able to do things like the taxes and the finances and pay the bills and keep your staff, you know, your payroll, if you can't do that side of it, you're going to fail. And that's why a lot of gyms open up and then they shut down, because they can't run the business side of it. Not that they're not good coaches or they don't mean well, or you know, they can't connect with their parents, but they just can't run the business side of it. At the end of the day, if you're going to run a cheer gym or all-star program, it still is a business. So thankfully, I had Kristen to lean on when it came to that. And she didn't have a business degree, neither do I. She just kind of learned as we went. But the fact that she was always organized and she had that instilled in her from a young age, because her mom and dad were very meticulous, mm-hmm. whereas mine were not, that's, I think, what saved us. That's why we're not still practicing the grass somewhere. That's why we have five locations, because if it was left up to me, we'd still be at Tropical Park. I'd still be coaching kids and getting rained out, you know, some nights, because we didn't have a roof over our heads. Because for me, it was about, I was just the mastermind behind the creative side of it, and coaching the kids and getting them to flip and do things like that. She's the brains when it comes to everything else.
That's fantastic.
So if you don't have someone, if you can't do it yourself, then align yourself, team up with, partner with someone who can offset the things that you cannot do, or you're not good at. That's what I would say for a gym owner. That's number one.
Can I just piggyback on that and say that is universal for any business? Most people, you don't come in knowing, being able to do everything. And sometimes people get scared, like, well, I'm not good at accounting, or I don't have a degree in business. And it's like, sometimes the best lessons you can learn are the hardships, are the failures to pivot. And as long as you learn from it and you don't keep repeating them.
Absolutely.
That's a wonderful universal statement for any business. Just my side note. mm-hmm. Okay, so now
the second thing I would say is, and this goes more as far as from the beginning, we never had any intention of expanding beyond us having our one gym in Miami. We had always feared that having another location and then another and franchising or doing things like that would just dilute the quality of our program. And if one thing, we were more concerned with having Top Gun be, you know, have this stellar reputation, always known for excellence, than to just say Top Gun has 500 locations. Everybody's a Top Gun athlete. We're making $1 million, but none of our teams are any good. You know, we don't produce a consistent product that is going to be continuously sought out for years and years to come. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of programs like that. And I've talked to gym owners like that. Some gym owners, they're in it for the money. They want to be able to retire off this. So they don't care what it looks like. They sign on the dotted line. Here you go. You can franchise. You can use my name. I get the paycheck. And that's all they care about. For us, it was never like that. For us, it was about protecting the quality. So it was very hard for us to even have that second gym. That's why I made that commute back and forth, because I wanted to make sure that it was looked at as being as good as what we've created in Miami, not, oh, you're the other Top Gun gym.
So you took the name seriously. Like, this isn't just a name, a company, a moneymaker. This is you. Your identity is
correct.
I appreciate that.
No, same. Absolutely.
And then the same time that we opened up our brand new facility here in Miami, we were approached by the Orlando All-Stars. They felt that they had pretty much reached their capacity as far as how many kids they were going to bring into their doors. And thought that, you know, having that notoriety, that name, was going to be what helps them break through that threshold. So it kind of worked out at a good time, because we're going to be taking on, you know, a huge mortgage payment every month. So like, well, this could be an opportunity to help us with this. And we also had one of our former athletes / coaches from the Miami gym who was now working for that program. So you'll find that with all of our locations, there's always people that came up through our Miami program that are affiliated with them. And that's why we felt comfortable expanding to Orlando, Ohio, and Arizona. It wasn't just, hey, here's our name, go do with it what you want, and we'll collect the paycheck. It was, we have eyes and ears there to help continue to steer them in the same direction that we would if we were there. So that's how we ended up with the Orlando location. It's a license agreement, which is not exactly the same as being as a franchise. They have their separate owners, Annie and Roger McClellan, who are amazing people that we've gotten to know over the past, 6 years. And Chris Sinatis was one of our former athletes. His brother, Matt, cheered on large co-ed. Chris cheered on the open team down here. Matt still coaches for us now, 15 years later. Chris still, you know, coaches for us 15 years later. So he was basically the main reason why we were comfortable getting into that that business deal. And it's worked out great for us. It's really helped us to have, you know, a bigger reach with our program. It helps us tremendously when we go to Orlando for all these events. We have a location there that we can practice at.
How awesome is that? And, I think that's pretty awesome.
And so there were a lot of benefits that we saw going into it, and that's why we agreed to it. And then Ohio followed shortly after that, and our coaches from the Ohio location, our coaches from Miami, Jose Gonzalez, who's cheered for us since he was 13 years old. He's now in his 30s. Another one, Greg Gazal, who he coaches Lady Jags amongst a bunch of other teams here, and does a lot of our music. He also cheered for us from high school. So, you know, these kids are there from 13, 14, 15 years old, all now in their 30s. They have been doing choreography for the Ohio Extreme location for years, about 10 years. And they told us, you know what, if you're going to open up another location, I think this is the place. They had the same like mindset, same philosophy, same views on, you know, what they expect from their athletes, from their parents, how they run their program. The owner, Heather, is very much like you, Kristen, when it comes to the finances and being organized. This will be a great fit for you guys if you're looking to do another gym. So that's how Ohio came to be.
That's amazing.
And they were kind of in the same predicament. They felt that they had kind of tapped out as far as they could reach their numbers with the Ohio Extreme name. I thought they were a phenomenal program. They were doing great under that name. And then bringing in the Top Gun name initially gave them a little bit of a boom, mm-hmm. a little more growth. But what I explained to, what we explained to all these other gym owners that ask us to, you know, can we license the name, is that it might help you initially. But at the end of the day, your program's only as good as how the owners run it and how the coaches coach it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, don't think that, oh, this is going to be the ticket to, you know, that you've been looking for. At first, yes. And then they start realizing, and it takes a couple of years for them to realize, okay, well, this is still work. I still have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. The name is not the only part of the organization. Yeah, so
there's been, we get about a dozen, if not more, emails and offers per season ever since opening up the Orlando, when I think people saw, oh my gosh, they do more than one gym. We can possibly franchise. We get people emailing us and contacting us all the time, and we're just turning them down left and right because we don't want to spread ourselves too thin. And we have so much on our plates as it is. And because we want to have our hand at every single location, and we want to have people that have, you know, cheered for us, coached for us, you know, have some type of affiliation with us so they understand mm-hmm. what we're all about, we can't just let anyone take the name Top Gun and run with it. Well, so that's why we only have our five right now.
I want to ask a piggyback question to this is, do you see a future? I think I asked this in season one, I think maybe of Jimbo. Do you see a future where it's going to be just a bunch of large known gyms, you know, compete? Or do you see, because view where small gyms can still, you know, come in from behind and.
Right. No, I think definitely the trend, if you're looking at the past couple of years, the trend is for these smaller gyms to either merge or get absorbed by or bought out or whatever, with larger programs like Sure Extreme, Sure Athletics, ACE, ourselves, California All-Stars. There's still going to be I think some of that's still going to happen, but as larger gyms, larger programs, we have to also protect these smaller programs. We have to help them be successful. That's why, you know, we're constantly speaking at different conferences and trying to share our knowledge rather than just keeping it all to ourselves. Because if you don't have these other programs, what are you going to go and compete against?
Exactly.
You can't just always be, Top Gun against Sure Athletics.
Yeah.
We're not going to see each other most of the season. You
and know? You're not going to grow the sport. If you think of it outside of the sport, you're not going to grow the sport if there's only like five teams to compete against, unless you're going to go like with the NFL model kind of, you know.
And even just looking at it on a local scale here in Miami, you know, like I said, we used to have Miami Elite All-Stars 20, 30 minutes north of us with a very strong competitive large co-ed team. Well, that just made us better, having them right down the road. Mm-hmm. And we had kids that, you know, we'd sometimes get from that program that would feed into ours. Well, then they went away. And then what happens to all of our boys, we're not producing and recruiting as many boys locally anymore. Like the boys that we get for, to fill that team every year are coming from other cities, other states, even other countries.
Yeah, we've heard. We had Seth on on the podcast.
Yeah. So it really does help to have smaller gyms in your area to not put them all out of business. You know?
No, I agree.
That happened.
I think
that's actually happening in our Naples, our Fort Myers gym is actually experiencing the struggles of what comes with that, because they've, since being there for the last 18 years, they've probably closed down 10 or 12 other gyms, smaller programs in the area. Not because they meant to, but just because kids see another product and like, oh, well, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Look at how much better they're doing. Look how much better they look. And all these little programs are closing down. So literally they're the only, you know, only gym on the block now. Yeah. And it's tough.
It's happening. I mean, we hear of it a lot. And the geography is also interesting in the sport of cheer, because there's so much feast or famine with the options of going to different gyms. So going back to the metaphor of you're doing a TED Talk, and now the audience is parents. What would you like to say to us that would help improve this industry? Like what's some of the patterns or best practices that you wish parents could bring to the table? Because I feel like cheerleading is a triangulation between, you know, the gym owners, the coaches,
absolutely, and that's something I've had to learn over the years. Because when I was younger, it was just I just wanted to deal with the kids, parents, drop a kid off, go somewhere else, don't talk to me. I was very unapproachable, and I think I always tried
and
to,
you know what? I think sometimes that might some parents, based on some of the stories we've heard and have experienced ourselves, that's understandable too. Yeah. There is a reason cheer parents are kind of known as being crazy. So. What, so you're in this TED Talk, talk to the parents. What would you want if you could, you know, magic wand the industry? What would you want to tell parents?
Parents, I would like for you all to know that your sole purpose in your child's cheerleading career is to be their biggest cheerleader. Stop trying to coach them. You're paying people to do that. Who, if you're paying them, you clearly feel that they are more knowledgeable, they have more expertise, they have the training, they have everything that you don't have, or else you'd be coaching your own kid or starting your own program. So let the coaches do their job. Don't stand by the door, don't stand by the window, giving them looks, coaching them through the glass, you know, because it's distracting to the coaches trying to do their job. And believe it or not, you're affecting your kids' growth and progress more than you know. Kids hearing in the car on the drive to the gym about what they need to do, what they didn't do, what they better do. And then on the way back home, I saw you, you didn't throw this, you didn't do that. How come you're here? How come you're not there? Like, all of that is just stealing the happiness and the passion that they had that made them want to get into it in the first place.
Do you feel like that's getting worse? I feel like social media has made it a little bit worse.
Unknown
like
caller.
I've seen, and I've seen this with my own eyes, and not at our gym, just in clinics and stuff that I've been lucky enough to attend to. I've seen parents act and behave in a way that I'm like, wow, that's not healthy at all for your child because you should be.
I mean, it's been going on for years. Since, I mean, in every sport, since the beginning, there's always going to be your opposite ends of the spectrum and everything in between.
Yeah.
You have the parents that are completely disconnected. Kids never see them. They never support them at all. The kids wish they were there to watch a practice. You have the ones that are there hovering the entire time. And every time the kid lands a skill, they look over in the window to see if mom saw it or dad saw it. Mm-hmm. And what was their reaction going to be? And those kids usually end up getting mental blocks. They usually end up leaving the sport early. They get injured because, you know, they're so worried about whether or not they're meeting their parents' expectations that it affects their performance. And maybe they, you know, they bail on a pass one time and that's what caused the injury or whatever.
Yeah.
See, all kinds of stuff. And then everything in between.
I've noticed it more on social media, at least in the last year. And maybe it's because I'm looking for it, but I feel like I've seen a few accounts, I guess I should say, where I feel I know it's the parent managing that account, that 8-year-old is not doing it.
We have those two.
Yeah. And I feel like there's this, and it's not a huge majority, but this group of people who are trying to create a brand. And I feel
a brand in their child.
Yes. I feel like saying, dude, it's a kid, not a brand.
Well,
like,
a lot of these parents are younger parents who they've grown up in the social media age. Mm-hmm. So that's what they know.
Yeah.
And they've seen seen examples of people who have made a lot of money off of YouTube channels and different things. So why not try to capitalize and monetize my daughter's talent if I can? So I think a lot of these younger children now are victims of their parents also being millennials that have grown up in this day and age, whereas the ones before that, not as much. They were just the ones that, you know, got the talking to in the car back and forth, but not the social media side of it.
Okay, we've monopolized so much every time, so I've got to ask this one, going back to analogy. Awesome. This one analogy on the TED Talk. So you've spoken to parents, you've spoken to gym owners. Now you have cheerleaders. And let's say that you're speaking to 13 and above, because under 13, I feel like really, you know, they shouldn't be listening to the podcast. But 13 and above, regardless if they're a world's team or if they're out in some gym that there's nothing around for 5 hours, what would you like to say to cheerleaders, like from your vast experience, seeing as many cheerleaders as have gone in and out of your program, what advice can you give cheerleaders?
Okay, so as an athlete, cheerleaders need to, and this is a lot of these concepts, again, are things that we are constantly trying to teach our athletes, and they're adult, mature type of concepts that maybe you can't grasp right away at 13 years old, but if they could try to. They need to first understand that if they want to do this because they love it, if they're doing it for any other reason, they're only going to get so far. Because if you don't love it, you're not really going to put all your time and energy and effort into it. That's number one. Number two, define what success is for you. And that really goes for gym owners, coaches, everything, but for an athlete as well. Define what success is for you, because if you're basing your success off of, you know, just getting a certain skill or a certain trophy or a certain, you know, title, well, that's very lonely, and you have to understand that it may not work out in your favor. You may not ever get that skill. You may not ever win that championship. You know, like it took us 6 years to get an NCAA championship, especially when it's those decisions are sometimes in the hands of other people. You know, the judges control the outcome, not you all the time. So you have to make sure that you're defining success for you. What's going to fulfill you? And is it something that's attainable? Is it something that you can consistently work at every day and you can measure? And, then everything, once you have that as your end goal, everything else has to align with that. Everything you say, everything you do has to be aligned with whatever that goal is. So if you say, you know, I want to get my back handspring by the time, you know, trials come around, and you've waited until the week before trials to start working on it, it's probably not going to happen.
No, we get that probably a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know from experience, and I've reached, you know, I feel like I've reached the highest levels of achievement in pretty much everything that I've set out to do as an athlete, as a coach, as a gym owner. Every single thing was hard work. There was no shortcut. That got me there. There was no easy way out.
I feel like listening.
It was something that you have to obsess over it. And the reason I even got into wanting to have a team, wanting to coach, is because I was that kid that came home from school after cheer practice. School was from 7 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Cheer was from 3 to 5. Then I would commute an hour and a half to gymnastics. Gymnastics was from like 6 to 10, then my coach would drive me home and drop me off. And at 11 o'clock, I would pop in cheerleading videos and I would study University of Kentucky, NC State, and I would watch Christian Brothers High School. And I would watch all these videos and go, what are they doing? How are they doing that? How can I get myself to do that? How can I get my kids to do that? and I would do it every single day.
And that's where
my education came from.
And I feel like listening to your story, it's that perfect example of preparation, being ready for those opportunities that came your way. Like, you were blessed with opportunities that you were prepared for because you were obsessed in a positive way with this passion of yours, which is cheerleading. So I kind of feel like you're this example of the perfect manifestation of, you know, following your dreams and following your passions and working really hard and continuing to grow. So thank you for sharing. That I have so many more questions for you, and I would love to have you more. Well, I have to cut it short because I have to go to work. but we have one last thing, the rapid fire for Marcus to do with you. And thank you so much. I think anyone who listens to this podcast, and it'll be evergreen, it'll be there for as long as it's posted, we'll be able to learn so much about you, your program, and cheerleading, because you are a fountain of information.
No, literally. No,
I appreciate it.
No, this is awesome. No, we appreciate it. So Marcus's rapid fire questions aren't super rapid fire, but I just want to get to know you just a little bit better.
Okay.
So we're going to start off with some easy stuff, and then I'm going to go for the hard hitters. Okay.
Can you speak up a little bit louder? I feel like you're kind of distant compared to Marisol.
Got it. All right, so we'll start off with something easy. What's your favorite food?
Favorite food, peanut M&Ms.
Amen. your favorite television show, like what show are you watching?
Currently, I'm really into Criminal Minds.
Yes.
12 seasons, I'm on like season 6.
Yes, okay, hard hitter. When did you realize that Top Gun Large Coed was like the TGLC? Like, is there a memory that like really stands out to you where you were like, this is huge?
I would say that I have to go all the way back to 1998. Like I said in the interview, that was kind of our turning point. I realized I was really onto something big.
That's awesome. Do you do your own choreography?
Yes. In the past, I've done it all. And then, you know, we'll do everything except for the dance, bring in the choreography for the dance. In more recent years, I'll do all of the basic, you know, skeleton of the routine and then bring in someone to do the dance, someone to help with, you know, adding the little fluff choreography motions here and there. But generally speaking, when it comes to stunts, pyramids, formations, the timing of things, you know, the vision of what it's supposed to look like, the music ideas, it's myself and then somewhat of Kristen. And we have a third coach named Carlos Diaz, who was on our team back in that 99-2000 year that first won NCAA. So he coaches with us now the past couple of years.
Nice.
So it's been great. It's been great not having to have all the pressure beyond me to do everything, so I can lean on the other two to help give me their opinions and help me figure things out and also put me in my place when I'm being a little bit too risky with, you know, some of the moves or choreography.
Okay, this one is just for me. I think this dance in this routine was is iconic. It's one of the first ones that I actually learned from like another gym that I wasn't a part of. The Score Tonight dance. Who did that one?
Eric Little.
He's a master. Okay.
Yeah, he did our dance again this year as well, and he did it last year too, I believe. Yeah.
Do you have any like coaching buddies, like a friendly, like rivalry?
A friendly rivalry. In that division, I would say are you talking about the large core team or is it Top Gun in general?
Top Gun in general, anyone?
We don't really consider ourselves to be rivals with anyone. I mean, we're always competitive. We know that it's always going to be probably, you know, us in Cheer Athletics, us in Stingrays, us in California. Like, we get that part of it, but we grew up with those people.
Yeah.
We cheered in college. with or against those coaches and those gym owners when they were athletes. We started our gyms around the same time, you know. So we're all friends. We sit on boards together. We sit on the USSF rules committee together. We started the NCCC together. We started the All Stars United together. So we're competitive on the floor, and that's where it stays.
I feel like that's where I'm at in my career, kind of. I like cheered with like a whole bunch of people. Now like they're like coaching their own teams or even like having their own gyms. And I don't know, it's fun to just like get together, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, last one. What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for my wife. I think that because of her, she is the man that I grew up to be and that I continue to aspire to be. I feel like I'm always learning from her. She's just from such a young age, she's so grounded, so mature, so organized, and just smart in so many different ways that, you know, I feel like she always had it figured out. And I was always the mess trying to get caught up. And a lot of aspects of our life, I still feel that way, you know. So,
can I just say, I can feel all the looks that women are giving their husbands right now in the car as they listen to this on their way to competition season.
Like, you don't talk to me like that.
You don't talk to me like that. Victor, thank you so much.
This was awesome.
This has been beyond a pleasure, and I truly appreciate your time for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you guys. I appreciate you honoring me to have me on the show. I really appreciate it, and I enjoyed it.
Marcus.
I still have chill bumps. I'm surprised I didn't cry. Because do you understand what we just listened to was like the birth of like real like wow cheerleading?
It was... I'm literally speechless. I'm literally speechless because when we started this last year, we just started. We haven't hit 50 episodes yet. Okay. And it's literally our dream, my dream for Cheer Mom, mm-hmm. the podcast is manifesting as we speak. And to me, you know, again, I keep saying I'm humbled. I'm overwrought with gratitude. Like, to be able to speak to someone who's been part of this industry, basically, you know, the version of the industry that is right now since mm-hmm. the inception of it mm-hmm. is an honor. There's no other word for it. It's an honor. So thank you. Thank you, Victor. And we have his beautiful wife next week for Summit Week. We have his beautiful wife coming on.
Hey, Miss Kristen.
And that interview, I think, is even longer.
No. Oh, my God. If I can just like be at their dinner table and just like listen to them.
I literally want to be adopted by like five of our guests, like into their family. Can I be the crazy aunt?
I'll be the fun cousin.
You'll be the gay uncle. You'll be
the gay uncle.
So many people think. I mean, thank you, Victor.
Thank you, Victor.
Thank you, Jimbo, who connected us with Victor. Thank you, Melissa, Melissa's really... You've pivoted this podcast for
Absolutely.
Us. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, Marcus.
No, thank you, Marisol.
Literally would not be here. Not for you.
This would literally not be going on if it wasn't for you. So
everyone, we're going to post this early because of Worlds. And we know a lot of people are traveling.
People are traveling, starting to travel like Wednesday and Thursday.
So we're going to post it as early as possible for everyone. Please share.
Yes.
We are not paying for advertising. And I have a personal request. If you have liked any of our podcasts, which we don't charge for, could you please, 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 please rate us and review us on iTunes? I really need that last review to not be the one I see every time I check it.
Please. You pause too much. I pause.
So, thank you, everyone, for listening. We are utterly grateful. Next week,
Kristen Rosario.
I'm so excited.
Can I ask for something?
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people's favorite part of going to Worlds and like seeing Worlds teams is watching practice on the football field. So if you are there during any of your favorite teams, any teams really, tag us in those, because I would love to see them.
Yes, tag us in everything and anything
you everything want. Worlds, tag us in it.
I did want to end the podcast with one little note. Already looking forward to season three. Mm-hmm. You know, we made changes from season one, mm-hmm. which I think were good.
Yeah.
I think they've been good changes. And we're thinking of making some more changes for season three, which we'll talk about more in the next couple episodes. But we have a bunch of people we are left to interview that we didn't get to in season two. We are going to schedule you for the summer. So be on the lookout for that. But also, we are looking for potential co-hosts to maybe add to the Cheer Bomb family.
Flava.
And you could be a cheerleader. You could be a parent. You could be a coach. And if you're interested, and we're not talking every week or anything, we're just playing with an idea. But if you would be interested in possibly co-hosting in season three a few episodes, email marisol@cheerbomb.com because we would like to talk to you.
Woo woo.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, Marisol.
Oh, hey, before you go, this is Sean, the producer guy. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to be part of the Cheer Bomb family and show your support, jump to our website at www.cheerbomb.com and check out our Cheer Bomb merchandise for sale, or find out how you can support this podcast with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes. And while Marcus and Marisol cheer you on, please cheer them on by checking out the Cheer Bomb podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Or better yet, share this podcast with your friends. Have a great week.
Cheer Bomb. We are strong. We are powerful. We are cheerleaders.